this is Dave Jeffrey welcoming you once again to Optimal Life. It's just for us older ones looking at retirement and maybe in retirement already, in those glorious years ahead. We would like to begin by acknowledging our wonderful sponsors, Optimal Life. They will give you free advice and very often help too on just about any legal matters at all. Give them a call. Contact them on the net. Optimal Life. First up today, we're looking at rookie campers. Took this article off the net. Caravanning and grey nomading is a wonderful pastime, but there are some pitfalls. Hopefully, this will help with some good advice. The article begins, "Our van duly arrived. Bewilderingly, though, there was no accompanying manual or a how-to guide. Nothing to explain how it worked." And the editor notes here, "Even a hairdryer comes with a manual." Well, we've got a list here of so-called rookie errors. Firstly, before you buy a camper van, make sure that you enjoy sleeping under the canvas. Camper trailers and tents can shake and rattle in the wind, and rainwater pools on the roofs. The solution, and this is most important, rent a camper for at least one trip before you buy, preferably more. Secondly, make sure the camper trailer and the towing vehicle are suited. It's no use having a glorious off-roader if your car's not up to the task. The solution? Check the specifications and do not rely on the camper trailer salesman to deliver a caution. Third one, check the clearances when leaving the property with a fully loaded trailer. Bottoming out across the gutter is not recommended. The solution here? Perhaps fill the water tank once you've got onto the street. 100 litres of water weighs 100 kilograms. Number four, make sure the chains connecting the trailer and the car are sufficiently long. You must have enough length to allow you to do tight turns. Otherwise, the chain could snap. The solution? Longer chains. Now, reversing. This is a big one. Reversing onto a vehicle ferry can be very testing, although it can be very amusing to the onlookers as well. The solution? Practice reversing at a quiet and spacious venue, then practice again. Number six, do not settle for the first campsite that you come across, or even the second or the third. The solution here is get out of the car and have a comprehensive walk around. That's better than driving down a narrow track, then having to reverse out, or spending a week wishing you'd set up the camper just over there. The seventh tip, even a slight incline can cause panic when you unhitch the trailer. It's pretty hard to stop a 1.5-ton runaway. The solution here, jam a good rock under the wheel and pull on the handbrake, or even better, park on the flat. Number eight, always double-check that the jockey wheel and the handbrake are off when you go. The solution, create a written checklist. Number nine, this is an important one too. It says, do not use up battery capacity while you're travelling. The solution? Turn off the water pump and the lights before you hit the road. Water pumps have been known to operate continuously if the tap has not been turned off properly. And number 10, treat your battery and fridge with respect. The solution here is fully charge the battery overnight before the trip and turn on the fridge for several hours before you load it up. And finally, it's all a learning curve, as most things in life are. However, they said even a hairdryer comes with an instruction manual, but not so caravanning. There's no instructions at all. But after every trip, you're going to want to hit the road again, we promise. Well, grey nomading is fun. I know I've done a bit of it myself, caravanning, but you've got to be careful. And I think the main tip there, go for a couple of trips in a hired van before you ever buy one. Okay, we're going to move now from holidaying and look at how you pay for it. This article, whilst not depressing, I guess, it is a little sobering. It says, low returns prompt retirement rethink. Taken from the Sydney Morning Herald on Wednesday, September the 23rd, written by Robin Bowman. A combination of record low yields and investment returns is creating huge headaches for us retirees. The old tried and true reliable income stream of interest from the bank, savings and company dividends is now under pressure. Term deposit rates have never been lower, and an increasing number of companies are either reducing or deferring dividends. Now, many retirees, and I'm certainly one of these, often use the 4% rule of thumb. This was to work out an appropriate level of income to withdraw from your retirement savings each year. That is, you take out about 4% of the portfolio value to live off, with the idea being that the portfolio yields at least 4% to pay for that. If we look back to 2013, an investor could have used a diversified portfolio. That is, they invested 50% in Australian shares, 25% Australian bonds, and 25% term deposits, and they'd get that 4% yield. This did not involve taking on too much risk, and it included having the downside protection of bonds and the peace of mind that term deposits bring. However, times have changed. Income-focused retirees now need to rethink how to earn enough to meet their spending goals. An investor today would have to shift a portfolio to 100% equities to get the same 4% yield as in 2013. But this provides all the risks associated with volatility and risks that the share markets bring. Well, we all know that interest rates have dropped. A bit of a sobering article there. It said years ago, we got, 2013, we got interest from the bank, we had savings and company dividends. But now, to do the same, you really need to shift 100% to equities to get the same 4%. But this provides a risk. Here with Optimal Life on the RPH Network. We're going to switch to health now and look at the difference between dementia and Alzheimer's. And this could be particularly helpful to people in a caring role. Early identification, of course, is always essential. This one's taken off the net. It said dementia is the second leading cause of death in Australia. Women account for nearly 65% of all dementia-related deaths. There are currently nearly 500,000 Australians living with dementia. Nearly 1.6 million Australians are involved in their care. Each day, 250 Australians are diagnosed with a type of dementia. It is one of the most common, yet misunderstood illnesses in the country. Outside medical fields, people often wrongly use the terms Alzheimer's disease and dementia interchangeably. Understanding the distinction is important for patients, caregivers, and family members alike. All right, we're going to look at a couple of headings. Firstly, dementia. Dementia is a general term used to describe a range of symptoms including memory loss, declining cognitive function, and reasoning skills severe enough to interfere with daily life. This occurs when brain cells are damaged, affecting their ability to communicate with another and impairing a patient's behaviour and feelings. There are many different causes of dementia. Now we're looking at a few here. There's frontotemporal dementia, Huntington's disease, mixed dementia. This is when multiple types of dementia occur simultaneously. Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, Lewy body dementia, Down syndrome and Alzheimer's disease, vascular dementia, Korus-Kadoff syndrome, Parkinson's disease dementia, posterior cortical atrophy, and normal pressure hydrocephalus. They were all types of dementia. Now we look at Alzheimer's disease. Alzheimer's disease, on the other hand, is a specific type of brain disease. It is the most common cause of dementia, accounting for 60 to 80% of dementia cases. Like other terms of dementia, it is caused by cell damage that changes the brain. It is a degenerative brain disease with symptoms worsening over time. In its early stages, Alzheimer's affects the part of the brain associated with learning. So, struggling to remember new information is one of the most common early symptoms. Other early symptoms include confusion with time or place. Then there's difficulty planning or problem solving, speaking or writing. Over time, the symptoms worsen. People with Alzheimer's will eventually find it difficult to perform normal tasks like walking, talking, eating. Okay, who gets dementia? While dementia risk does increase with age, not all old people develop it, and not all people who do develop it are old. It can affect some people from all backgrounds and walks of life. While most people with dementia are over the age of 65, some people in their 40s and 50s can develop younger onset dementia. All right, let's look now. What are the early signs of dementia? Early signs of dementia may be hard to notice, but some common symptoms include confusion, frequent memory loss, inability to perform daily tasks, withdrawal and apathy, and changes in personality. Neither Alzheimer's nor other types of dementia are a normal part of aging, though age is one of the greatest known risk factors for both. There is currently no known cure or way to prevent either. Having said that, there are medications that have been shown to help reduce and manage the symptoms of people with dementia. Now, I'm going to come back in a moment and give you a number for the helpline. Okay, we've got the National Dementia Helpline, 1800 100 500. I'll say that again, National Dementia Helpline, 1800 100 500. Okay, a bit of good news now on health, more cash for online treatment. This is taken from the Telegraph on the 20th of September. People will be able to see a doctor, nurse or specialist from the safety of their own home for another 6 months. This is under a $2 billion boost to the federal government's COVID-19 health response. Medical services that do not require a physical examination will remain accessible by phone or video. This will remain until March the 31st next year. It will ensure that people can safely receive care during the pandemic. This massive cash injection includes the federal government's share of its agreement to foot the bill for 50% of all hospital costs. Continued funding for the 148 special fever clinics, home medicine delivery, more personal protective equipment, and ongoing free coronavirus tests will all be covered. This telehealth is also being extended for essential specialist services. These include consultant physicians, geriatricians, and neurosurgery services. You can now have a consultation by phone if a physical assessment is not necessary. A little warning now on health, though. Antacid cancer risk. Cancer patients are more likely to die of their disease if they use common antacids at the same time as the immunotherapies. This is according to a groundbreaking Australian study. Flinders University researchers found bladder cancer patients using antacids called proton pump inhibitors were more likely to have their cancers progress, and they were less likely to respond to immunotherapy cancer treatment than those not using antacids. The research said these findings suggest that non-critical proton pump inhibitors use needs to be approached very cautiously. Well, there you are. Be careful of antacids, particularly if you're having bladder cancer treatment. They're called proton pump inhibitors. You're listening to the RPH Network. I guess you could say we're staying on the subject of health now. Our next article looks at sex as we age. It's written by Lucy Parachik, and she's a sex therapist who tells us how to keep our sex life on track. She says sex has been around since the beginning of time. It's a very important part of our lives. But it is a topic that's too often taboo and misunderstood. There are many misconceptions surrounding sex and aging. She says here are five of these misconceptions. And just repeating these five are all wrong. She disproves them all. Okay, the first one says, sexual intimacy has nothing to do with the relationship dynamics. She says absolute rubbish. Conflicts in relationships can cause a strain on desire, arousal, and wanting to be sexual. Likewise, strong emotions such as anger or a breach of trust can lead to one party withholding sex. It is important to be able to communicate effectively and openly and discuss your needs. You must also discuss your feelings and concerns with your partner. The number two myth. We have been together for a long time, so my partner should know what I want by now. Again, absolute rubbish. She said this is completely untrue. People in the early stages of a new relationship are often trying to impress their partner and be on their best behaviour. Sadly, many people do not communicate their sexual needs early, and as time goes on, this can become a problem. Their sexual needs are not being met. She says, in my experience, this can be due to a fear of judgment, self-consciousness, not wanting to appear to be inexperienced or too experienced, also not wanting to make their partner feel a particular way, not having the words to express their needs, or feeling shy. These are just to name a few. Also, our upbringing, maybe strong messages around sexual and religious beliefs, can also play a part. Whether you are in a new relationship or been in a relationship for decades, it's never too late to start talking. Have a think about what you might be wanting or needing and have a gentle chat about it. Now, here's a couple of hints about the chat. Firstly, ensure this chat takes place away from the bedroom. Make sure it's in a neutral space and not just after being intimate. That can really dampen things. Okay, myth number three. It says, I'm over 50, I don't need to worry about sexually transmitted infections, STIs. She says, absolute rubbish. STIs are on the rise. Older people still need to take precautions with new sexual partners. Often people do not consider the use of condoms. They're not worried about pregnancy and later life, but it is advisable that both partners complete tests before starting a new relationship. Myth number four, sex toys are only for young people. Again, she says, absolute rubbish. Sex toys can be fun and useful for people of all ages. Toys can be helpful during partnered sex, and they can take the pressure off men having to, quote, perform. A little help from a rubber or silicone friend can work wonders. For women, self-assurance with a dildo or a vibrator can help by increasing blood flow to the genitals and keeping lady parts more responsive and supple. Also, sex toys can be really helpful for arthritic hands and used for stimulating and manipulating areas that might otherwise be hard to reach. But remember, condoms should be used if sharing sex toys with a partner. Myth number five. I am too old for sex. Well, this one, she says, is busted. Absolute rubbish. She says, no, no, no. Of course, changes take place as we age. But that does not mean that sex is completely off the table. Although some physical changes are unavoidable, these things include flexibility and stamina. There are access these days to many interventions like Viagra and Cialis for men, and also lots of aids for women too. Now, the article finished on an interesting note. They said researchers contacted just over 2,000 Australians. And what did they find? They found that over 70% were still enjoying sex. This next article, I guess, is good news for a lot of people. It says, fatter legs linked to reduced risk of high blood pressure. That's right, fat legs are good, they're saying. It begins with a question. It says, have you been blasting your thighs in an attempt to get the perfect set of pins this summer? Well, it appears that if you have fat legs, it turns out that it might be not such a bad thing. A new study has revealed that having fatter legs is linked to lower risk of suffering from high blood pressure. Research is discovering that people that have a higher percentage of total body fat in their legs were less likely to have high blood pressure. That is, they are less likely to have high blood pressure than people with a lower percentage of fat in their legs. Principal investigator of the study explained a virtual hypertension conference that was not how much body fat you had, but where it is located. That's what's important. It went on to say that although we know confidently that fat around your waist is detrimental to health, the same cannot be said for a fat leg. If you have fat around your legs, it is more than likely not a bad thing. It may even be protecting you from hypertension. This is according to our findings. The study examined the rate of high blood pressure in 6,000 adults within the average age of 37. Around 24% of these were suffering from high blood pressure. Special X-rays measured fat tissue in the legs, and these measures were compared to overall body fat tissue. Investigators classified participants as having either a high or low percentage of leg fat. High fat defined as 34% more for males and 39% or more for females. Participants with high blood pressure or leg fat were less likely than those with lower levels of fat to have all three types of blood pressure. Compared to those with the lower percentages of fat, participants with higher percentages of leg fat were 61% less likely to have the type of high blood pressure. In addition to this, risk for participants with a higher leg fat was 53% lower for a diastolic high blood pressure and 39% lower for a systolic high blood pressure. If these results are confirmed by larger, more robust studies, and in studies using easy accessible measuring methods and high circumference, there is a potential to affect patient care. Just as waist circumference is used to estimate abdominal fat, thigh circumference may be a useful tool as well. Well, that's somewhat good news, I guess. They said more ladies have thicker legs than men, but it might be a good thing and not necessarily a bad thing. So there you are. Good news, hopefully. We're going to look now at travel and insurance, and I guess with pandemic restrictions being lifted, many of us are thinking to travel, but learn from our past experience. This is simply called insurance, written by Anthony Keane, taken from the Sydney Morning Herald. Travel insurance was in the bad books of holidaymakers earlier this year. Many discovered their policies did not cover them for COVID-19-related cancellations and costs. But protecting yourself financially from unexpected travel problems remains important. This is especially as Aussies set their sights on exploring at home in the year ahead. New research suggests Australians are now more likely to sign up for domestic travel cover than ever before. Research found that while just 15% of people had used travel insurance for domestic trips in the past 5 years, the coronavirus and bushfires have prompted 26% to say they'll sign up for next time. However, 46% say they will not buy travel insurance for a future holiday. This puts them at risk of big bills if they suffer non-COVID cancellations, maybe delays, theft, damage, car hire problems and other issues. All right, we're going to look at a couple of headings here. Firstly, the costs. Second, car hire help. And third, why we cancel. Firstly, the costs. Cover's not too expensive, with a 7-day domestic policy being around $60. That's for a single, or $110 for a family. While the 14-day policies can be as low as $70, and $140 for families, respectively. Make sure you read the policy before you travel. Pandemic cover was an exclusion in many policies long before COVID existed. Also, travellers might be doing their own risky activities that are not covered by their insurance. Now, car help. Using travel insurance to cover rental car excesses can deliver huge savings. If you look at these excesses, they're something like $5,000, and the amount of money they want to bring back can be like $500. There's a massive difference. It is more than the car rental itself. Now, there is a website here. It's simply called comparetravelinsurance.com.au. I'll say that again at the end. The director says rental car companies charge between $25 and $45 a day to reduce the standard excess liability. He says a lot of people do not realise that purchasing domestic travel insurance is usually cheaper than paying for excess reduction. If you're hiring a car for more than 2 days, a travel insurance policy can be a real cost saver. The last heading, why we cancel. One of the most common reasons for cancellations is family emergencies. There are many reasons that trips are cancelled, such as the traveller or the family member becomes seriously ill or injured. Redundancy is another one. Severe weather or natural disasters. Make sure that your personal belongings, including mobile phones and laptops, are covered as well. While airlines may be held accountable for luggage lost or damage in transit, if the loss happens elsewhere, travel insurance could be your answer. Now, I'm just going to repeat that again. The website there is comparetravelinsurance.com.au. And they're saying a lot of people don't realise that purchasing travel insurance is usually cheaper than paying the excess. Good luck if you're travelling. A couple of tips there. Well, that's about all we have time for today. I hope you've enjoyed the programme. I'd just like to say, as we often do, please let us know what you think of the programme. What you would like to hear more or less of. We've had a couple of requests for transitional activities, things where people are leaving work and heading into retirement, things we can do. We try to do travel, but exercise and interests as well. We will concentrate on that a little in the future. Once again, the number here is 02-9518-8811. Also, anything you've heard in the program, we always keep records of it, so if you'd like to know more or hear it again, we'd be only too happy. Once again, thank you very much for being with me, and I look forward to your company again soon. This is Dave Jeffrey saying bye for now.